This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, powered by the Family Research Council, your embassy of faith, family, and freedom in the heart of our nation's capital. Now, here's your host, FRC President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Today we're broadcasting live from Mason, Ohio. In fact, we're broadcasting all this week from the road as we're traveling to five different states building support for Operation Bold Advance. We'll talk more about that later in the program, and I'm joined by former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, who is on the road with the FRC team. Coming up on this Monday edition, after Special Counsel Robert Mueller issued indictments in the Russian election interference investigation Friday, President Trump responded by tweeting, "No collusion," to which the New York Times criticized the president for focusing on himself rather than national security. Really, that's the issue the media has focused on from the very beginning. Well, is there more to come in the Russian probe? Congressman Don Bacon of Nebraska will be here to discuss the probe. And hot off the press is a new book entitled The Faith of Donald J. Trump, A Spiritual Biography. The book explores his rarely discussed but deeply important religious beliefs and relationships with evangelicals. Co-author David Brody, the chief political correspondent for the Christian Broadcasting Network, will be here to talk about his new book. Also, a disturbing story here in Ohio. A state judge is moving to sever parental rights of a 17-year-old teenage girl that identifies as a boy and wants to undergo hormone treatment. But the parents object. The attorney representing the court-appointed guardian argued the teen should be taken from the parents because the parents are not open-minded when it comes to transgenderism. Aaron Baer, president of Citizens for Community Values here in Ohio, would join us to unpack that case. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with us this week, at T. Perkins. Yesterday, we were at in Pennsylvania. Great group of folks there in Lancaster County. Just some salt-of-the-earth people. And we had a great time at Ephrata Community Church. Great congregation there. And, you know, it's good to get outside of D.C. and travel around the country and meet with folks who, despite what the media says, are very much committed to the future of this country and very supportive of what they see happening in the Trump administration. We'll talk more about that this week as we, as I said, make our way across the country. But first, the investigation into Russian involvement in the 2016 presidential election continues. On Friday, Special Counsel Robert Mueller announced a series of indictments of Russian agents who allegedly interfered with the U.S. presidential election in 2016. The indictment includes 13 Russian people and related to 13, three Russian companies. Joining us now is Don Bacon. He represents the 2nd Congressional District of Nebraska, serves on the House Homeland Security Committee prior to being elected to Congress. He served 30 years in the U.S. Air Force, ultimately retiring as a brigadier general specialized in electronic warfare, intelligence, reconnaissance, and public affairs. He is also a true blue member, recognized for voting 100% with the family issues with the Family Research Council. Congressman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, sir, and it's good to be on with you, Tony, and I'm excited to hear that Michelle Bachmann's out there with you as well, but good to be on with you.
Well, thank you, Congressman. Yeah, she's out crisscrossing the country with us. Let me ask you this. The president on Friday, among other tweets, he's been kind of in a tweet storm here through the weekend, but one of the first things he said was, no collusion. This proves the campaign had nothing going with the Russians when it came to campaign interference. And one of the first things we saw trying to tilt the elections, the New York Times takes him to task for focusing on himself rather than the threat to national security and the integrity of our election system. What do you have to say about that?
Well, surely the left and much of the media has been talking about potential criminal collusion between President Trump and his campaign team in Russia, but there's been no evidence of it thus far. But I think what the indictments pointed out, and it's what I've been saying for a year, and I've studied Russia since 1985, as part of the Air Force before that in college, their goal is to sow discord in our political discourse. And they know we're divided politically, and they're throwing gas on the partisan fires. I think this was less about Trump or Clinton, but really it was an effort to divide us. And I think that this indictment points to that as well. They're just trying to cause troubles and mischief, and we got to know better. We got to realize and not play into their hands.
Well, I would certainly think that the way the media has reacted to this from the very beginning, they've taken the bait.
They sure have, and so have the left. And Schumer and Pelosi, it's about all they can talk about, and it's dividing us, and it's what the Russians wanted to have happen in the first place. And I think when France had this happen, their political leadership came right out in the open and said, Russia's trying to undermine our elections. We cannot fall into that. We have to ignore their provocations. And really, President Obama should have done that in the late summer and the fall of 2016 when this was going on. And I think we needed to talk about it more openly early.
Well, Congressman Bacon, let me ask you this. Now we have these indictments out. People have been waiting for Mueller to see what he was going to do. Have we learned anything new about this investigation based upon these indictments?
Well, I think that we have more clear-cut evidence that there were leaders and individuals in Russia that had the precise goal of dividing us and creating, a political divide and sowing discord. So I think that these indictments make it more crystal clear what the Russian goal was. And I say again, it's less about propping up Trump or undermining Clinton.
Right.
It was really about dividing us.
Well, that was evident when one particular individual, I think named in these indictments, on the same day was behind organizing an anti-Trump rally and a pro-Trump rally in New York City.
Right. And they don't do it just in America. All over Europe, Asia, you name it, they're involved in trying to divide. Because what they want to do is have democratic countries or Republican-formed governments be divided and turn on each other. And when we turn on each other, we're less focused on what they're doing in Ukraine, what they're doing in Syria, and how they're threatening the Baltics. And they gain more leeway, in their part of the world. So this is their way of distracting us from what they're doing, and helps them further their goals while it undermines our ability to stop that.
Well, Congressman, if my memory serves me right, I think we had a national leader at one time that said a nation divided cannot stand.
Right.
And so I think that's what they are trying to exploit, is a nation that is ideologically and politically divided.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think the media in particular has taken the bait. The president, very defensive about this, and responds back and says, look, the evidence is now clear through these indictments that there was no collusion. But the media, instead of saying, it was right, there was no collusion here, it is the Russians trying to meddle, create the discord, as you said. Instead, they go after the president for trying to clear his name.
Well, the mainstream media, 80 or 90% of them are clearly very biased against the president. The president has pointed fingers in their chest, and they have to be big enough as media to still be as unbiased as they possibly can, but I think they are unable to do so. Media's clearly got their guns trained on him, and I don't think it's been very helpful. Again, we just got to make clear that there has been no evidence of Trump criminal collusion or people on his team, and it's been the Russians just trying to create mischief here. And I do think that we need to be aware that this is going to happen again. So we need to be aware of what the Russians are doing. I think where we can, we need to take smart precautions to defend our social media, but also to look at the election apparatus. And if there's smart ways that we can make them more secure, we should.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. We're broadcasting live from a remote location, Mason, Ohio, one of the reddest places in the Buckeye State. In fact, I wasn't far from here. I grew up as a kid in Westchester, Ohio. But we're talking with Congressman Don Bacon of Nebraska about the Russian investigation. I want to jump in just a moment, Congressman, to the recently passed bill that's going to provide more funding for our military, because I think it's related to this topic. But first, are we anticipating anything else in this Russian probe? Is there more to come?
I would be surprised if there's some more things that will happen. I think it seems to me that the special investigators looking at more if were people being honest under oath, we maybe see more things along those lines. But I don't think there's any evidence of criminal collusion. Otherwise, we would have had more evidence thrown on the table, more leaks to that effect. I just don't see that part happening. I think there's still more life to the investigation, and they'll call it some cover-up activity, but I don't think in the collusion area, I don't see it happening.
Congressman, you said we've got to keep our eye on Russia. There are military experts who still say Russia is one of the greatest threats to our nation. We have a military that's been depleted, both from a materiel standpoint, but also a moral standpoint with the social experimentation thrust upon it by the previous administration. Congress took one step in correcting the aspect of the material and support by a newly passed defense budget that's going to increase spending for our military. What's the path forward look like for our nation's military?
Well, this was a huge step. It's the best defense bill, an authorization bill, and appropriations bill that we're going to get in over 10 years. It'll be the first time that our military's received a pay raise that's equaled inflation or better. If you go back 10 years, the military was cut 18% total, and then we had 37 now continuing resolutions that really are corrosive to the military readiness. And so what you have now is half the Navy's aircraft can't fly. A lot of the Navy fighter pilots fly 11 hours a month, which should be 30 hours a month for training. We have the oldest and the smallest Air Force in the history of the service. Our Army's the smallest it's been since World War I, our Navy since World War II. And the readiness levels, meaning is the unit ready to deploy and do its mission, the overall military readiness is the lowest it's been since 1977, in those hollow 4 years right after Vietnam. So we needed to do help immediately. So this defense bill that we've got agreement on now and that we passed with the budget agreement will plus up the military by 10%. And mind you, we've cut it 18%, so it's not a full buyback. And if we can hold that even with inflation for 3 or 4 years, we'll get our military healthy again. But we're going to have improved cyber, missile defense, more stealth aircraft, build our Navy towards a 355-ship Navy. There's tons of goodness in this bill. It's the best bill for the military in over 10 years.
Well, Congressman, we're almost out of time, but I want to ask you this question. When you describe the military, and you're not the first to do that, I mean, I've had General Boykin on here many times. We've talked about the state of our military. But let's talk about the state of the world. The world is probably one of the most dangerous places it's been since World War II, if not even greater than that. But yet we have a military that's not prepared to meet the threats.
I believe in peace through strength and having a deterrence, and we do live in a dangerous world. Russia is growing in power. It's threatening Ukraine. You know, it already took parts of what took the Crimea, parts of central Ukraine. They're threatening the Baltics. They're down in Syria. China is a growing power with vast capabilities, almost equaling our GDP and what can invest. We have North Korea with 60 nuclear weapons. Iran that would like to have a nuclear weapon, but has its influence throughout the Middle East, undermining our allies. So, yes, it's a dangerous environment.
Well, I appreciate the work you're doing to rebuild our nation's military. And thanks so much, Congressman Bacon, for joining us today.
It's an honor to be on.
And congratulations again on being a true blue member of Congress.
I'm proud of 100% rating. Thank you.
All right, Congressman Don Bacon of Nebraska, as I mentioned, he's one of the True Blue recipients. To find out what your member of Congress, how they rated, go to TonyPerkins.com. You can follow the links over and look at the FRC Action Scorecard. All right, when we come back, we're going to be joined by David Brody with CBN. He's the chief political correspondent for CBN. He talks about his new book when we return.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, tonyperkins.com. Still to come, Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann traveling with the FRC team as we're crisscrossing the country this week. We'll talk more about that when she joins me later. But first, Hut Off the Press, The Faith of Donald J. Trump, a spiritual biography written by our good friend David Brody, the chief political correspondent for the Christian Broadcasting Network, and Scott Lamb. And he joins us now to give us a scoop on his book. David Brody, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, always good to be with you. Thanks.
Well, how's the book doing? I mean, it's hot off the press. It's out there. It's telling the behind-the-scenes stories. It's pretty good stuff.
Well, as you might imagine, the mainstream media just loves this book, Tony, as I drip with sarcasm with that statement. But, yeah, apparently it's going very well. We don't have final figures yet for this week for book sales, but apparently the publisher's pleased, so that's good. Look, I mean, this is the other part of the Donald Trump story that you don't hear about. Tony, you've experienced it behind the scenes, and many others have. And, of course, as I give you a plug, Tony's in the book as well. But a lot of behind-the-scenes story. I was on with Chris Cuomo from CNN's New Day last week in New York, and I said, look, Chris, it's like this in television. You have a 30-second soundbite, and you're playing 12 seconds of it, and that's Russia and other things about Trump. Well, this is the other 18 seconds. And, you know, this gives you a fuller picture of who he is. When I say the faith of Donald Trump, this is not the sainthood of Donald Trump. It's not the Lamb's Book of Life, a different book for sure. God will judge Trump, will judge me, will judge you, will judge everybody out there. That's not what this book is. It's not an apology tour at all for Donald Trump. What it is it really gives you a sense of his worldview, from a religious DNA perspective, back to his childhood and his parents and where they came from. And then the spiritual voyage that he's on today, which definitely in the last couple of years, he's come into contact with people that he's never met before, and that's made an impact on him.
Yeah, and I think you aptly catch it and capture it with the focus on the fact that Donald Trump has won over evangelicals, not by pandering to them, but by supporting them and the issues that are important to them.
Well, that's right. And as a matter of fact, if Donald Trump won, a lot of people say, well, Donald Trump's just pandering to evangelicals. Well, Tony, you know, even if he wanted to pander to evangelicals, he wouldn't know how. He just doesn't get it anyhow. There's a story in the book about my first interview with Donald Trump in April 2011. And I ask him about going to church. And he goes, you know, I go to church on Easter and I go on Christmas and then I go on a couple of Sundays. Well, Tony, not probably the best answer for the Christian Broadcasting Network, which basically proves that, look, he's not out to pander. We know with Donald Trump, what you see is what you get, which is refreshing. It definitely gets him into trouble, for sure, on Twitter and other places. But, boy, I tell you what, along comes a guy that's pretty authentic. And at this point, we'll take authenticity over anything else at this point.
So, David Brody, do you think from your delving into this that, you know, the president's very transactional? Is his relationship with evangelicals partly transactional?
Well, I think from a couple – that's a great question. A couple things. From a personal standpoint, look, I think if someone who he counts on and trusts as a friend or someone that he's really had a good relationship with, and then that person burns him, well, we know what Donald Trump will do to that person, evangelical or not evangelical.
He takes
on Twitter.
To Twitter.
He takes to Twitter and he punches twice as hard. I mean, he's the best counterpuncher in American history right now. So there's no doubt about that. And that includes evangelicals. The good news is that, at least for evangelicals, that really hasn't happened. And why? Because I think a lot of these evangelical leaders, Tony, you being one of them, have seen a different side of Donald Trump, more of a relational connection with this person. The person that people just don't understand. And, you know, he's been able to show that time and time again. There's a lot of stories in the book displaying what that's about. And I think people are going to actually be pretty interested to read about this Donald Trump. Look, I think a lot of times people get lost in the personality of Donald Trump. In other words,
right.
He's a New Yorker for 40 years. He's brash. He's bold. He only knows a certain way. He grew up in mainline Presbyterianism, which headed towards the liberal side of things. And now all of a sudden he's got full gospel, fire-breathing, Pentecostal-type folks and others around him, and boy, he's wondering what in the world is going on, and he's listening though, and God can work with curiosity.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I have seen that side that you described, and there is a side of him that the people do not see. And you talk about one of the stories in your book when he came down to Louisiana when I was serving as the interim pastor of the church there in Baton Rouge that flooded. And he and Franklin Graham and Mike Pence and I were out touring and looking at the devastation, and he was visibly moved with compassion. I remember a couple of times he stopped the Secret Service so that he could get out and go talk to the people who were dragging their possessions to the street. So there clearly is a side of him that most people don't have an opportunity to see.
Well, that's right. And as a matter of fact, for this book, we actually did interview the president. Sorry, Michael Wolff, but we did interview the president in the Oval Office, and we also interviewed the vice president twice for this book. And it was the vice president telling me that story in Louisiana, Tony, about you and Donald Trump at the time and Mike Pence. I say Donald Trump at the time because I believe it was in August of 2016.
Right.
And Franklin Graham, all four of you in a car, no cameras rolling at all. And he was so visibly moved, as you said, about the folks down there. And then what Franklin Graham's ministry was doing down there. And so he just felt compelled to write a check. He said, I've got to do something. And he does. He wants to write a check to Samaritan's Purse. And of course, Franklin Graham at that point says, please, look, give it to Tony's church. They're the ones really doing the work down there. And so the point is, this is a type of story you don't hear. And the fact that there were no cameras rolling really kind of shows you that other side of Donald Trump. And that's a story the vice president actually told me. So it's nice to hear it from his lips rather than a third-party source.
Yeah. And then I've seen other incidents like that as well. David, we're up against a break. Where can folks get a copy of the book?
Amazon.com, but it's also in Barnes & Noble and, of course, every bookstore around. It's right there in the Octagon, which they're putting it way up high. So, you know, that's great. I hope there's not fistfights in Barnes & Noble over it, but that's where you can find it, Tony.
Well, I'm sure the president's praying your book does well.
I hope so.
All right, David Brody, as always, great to talk with you, my friend.
Thanks, Tony.
All right. You can find out more. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. But, you know, it's an interesting read. It's one of those books that you kind of like to get the behind the scenes, because it's what a lot of people ask me about is, well, what's the president really like? This kind of gives you another aspect of the president that's very much a part of who he is. And it'll surprise you. All right. When we come back, a disturbing case here in the state of Ohio where a state judge is moving to sever parental rights because parents of a teenager object to hormone therapy. That's coming up next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay. Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue. If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, a disturbing case here in the state of Ohio. This past Friday, Sylvia Hendon, a visiting juvenile court judge, issued a ruling granting legal custody to the grandparents of a teenage girl who wants to transition to a boy. Now, the rationale is that the parents were not open-minded to the transition, but the grandparents were. Very significant case because parental rights, that exceeds the focus. I mean, when you think of what is important in society, obviously private property, free speech, but right up there are parental rights. That's long been a cornerstone that you rarely see the rights of a parent severed, unless, of course, there's abuse, there's neglect, there's abandonment. But in this case, they argued that the parents were not open-minded, therefore custody should be given to the grandparents who were open-minded to the idea of transgenderism. Joining us now to discuss this further, Aaron Baer. He is the president of the Citizens for Community Values here in the Buckeye State. Aaron, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks for having me.
Aaron, this is a disturbing case that I think, regardless of the subject matter, people should be very concerned about a court moving to sever parental rights because parents have a concern about a choice that a juvenile is making that will affect the rest of their lives.
Absolutely, Tony. You know, this case, in so many ways, is so unprecedented. It's things like this that people like you and I have been warning for years about what's happening with the growth of government and the intrusion of the government and family life, that we've been saying this is coming, and now we actually see it come into fruition in Cincinnati, where this judge is. There's, from all indications, and a lot of the court records are sealed, but from all indications from the judge's decision that came out Friday, there were no other mitigating factors here, only the fact that this kid wanted to take puberty, dangerous and untested puberty-suppressing drugs, and the parents decided, no, that's not the best course for you. And just because of that decision, that was enough for the county to move to take away the child. I mean, that is truly government intrusion into our lives.
Now, Aaron, I want to be clear on something you said. There are no other circumstances. There's no allegations of abuse by the parents. The parents have done nothing wrong in this case. It's just an issue of a teenager wanting to go through a transition from being a female to a male, and the court has interjected itself and said, we're going to give custody to someone else.
From what we can tell right now, because most of the court records here are sealed, what we can tell from what the court has actually put out, that seems to be the case. The judge at one point said the county filed neglect and abuse charges against the parents, but then dropped those charges. And you typically don't see those types of things where those charges get dropped if there is actual neglect or abuse. It feels like the county was kind of posturing to threaten the parents to get them to back off on this, which, from all we're seeing, the parents have done their best to stand by the kid, to look out for their child. They've allowed the child, because the child's asked to live with the maternal grandparents, they've allowed the child to live with the grandparents who are more pushing this transgender ideology. They've allowed the child to live there because that's where they want to be, but they just haven't consented to this dangerous and untested puberty-suppressing drug so that the child can eventually go through gender transition surgery when they turn 18, which the parents realize they have no control to stop them beforehand, but after they turn 18.
So the court's actions on Friday paves the way for the hormone treatment to begin.
Absolutely, and that's the real horrifying aspect of this, is to, as a parent of small children, to imagine the government coming in and taking my kid or taking anyone's kid because they think the kid should be on puberty-suppressing drugs or any of these other drugs, which people like Ryan T. Anderson have spelled out time and time again how these drugs are untested, are not approved for this usage, and really can do long-term damage to children.
And the parents, according to the stories and their testimony, were trying to get help for their teenager, seeking counseling, Christian-based counseling, to which it appears that the court-appointed representative scoffed at the notion that religion was playing a factor in here, in fact stating that the child was made to listen to the Bible for 6 hours at one sitting. Of course, the average teen watches about 9 hours of social media and television in a day's period, so I'm not sure where the torture is in that, as they would imply.
Right. Well, and Tony, I think you're narrowing in on something that where this is about parental rights and religious freedom, where apparently having a Christian worldview is equivalent to neglect and abuse, is really what the county is angling here. And the reality is, the facts are, the parents were actually taking the responsible approach by not pushing the kid into taking these these puberty-suppressing drugs. Because, you know, the research shows that 80% of children that identify with gender dysphoria at one point, claim to have gender dysphoria at some point, will naturally, just on their own, realign with their biological sex. So why would you start putting them on drugs that can do permanent damage just because at some point or another they feel confused?
Yeah. Wow. We're going to keep an eye on this case. Aaron Baer, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Thanks for the great work you do in Ohio. All right, folks, stick around. We're coming back with more Washington Watch after this.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right, before I bring on our next guest, I just want to go back to this story here in Ohio. And this, I'm sure it does, should send chills down the spine of every parent in America. Where, I mean, I want to read, this is an article that it's CNN, okay? So certainly not slanted in the favor of the parents. But according to I'm quoting from an article from CNN from last week. According to a transcript of a closing argument, the grandparents said they are prepared to make medical decisions with the child, which may include starting hormone therapy. Quote, we think the grandparents are the ones who have an open mind and will make the sort of decision that is best for the child, argued attorney Paul Hunt, who represents the guardian or the court-appointed guardian, which are the grandparents. Quote, the parents have clearly indicated they are not open to it. So because the parents don't have an open mind, they should not have custody of their own child. So what if the child wants to smoke, do drugs, binge drink, or engage in other risky or harmful behavior? Do the parents need to have an open mind about that too? Or is it just the left's touchstone issues of abortion and homosexuality, where if the parents aren't open-minded about that, then the state has a right to come in and sever parental rights? Folks, I hope you see what's going on here. This is extremely dangerous, and of course it's being fueled by the LGBTQ activists, who they don't want anybody to say anything about this. And they hammer them, and they have politicians, they have members of the clergy, they have everybody afraid to speak the truth. And let me give you a few statistics here. Now, Aaron mentioned that roughly 80% of teenagers of puberty, going through puberty, they go through this, revert to their gender of birth. They have a little confusion, but they get through it. But let's talk about the issue of oftentimes what's used as an excuse for this. Well, they are feeling suicidal, and so therefore we've got to allow them to transgender. Well, here's the problem. Almost the same percentage, around 40% of those who were suicidal before are suicidal afterwards. Because this is, as has been pointed out by many medical experts, this is not a physical problem, it's a mental problem. And changing your body parts is not going to make you content if you are discontent with what God, who God created you to be. And it is absolutely wrong for the state to step in with their no other circumstances, we heard in this case, no abuse, affirming. In fact, the parents are quoted as loving their child, being supportive of their child, but just disagreeing with this choice of transgendering to the opposite sex. But yet that is basis enough in the eyes of the state to take that child away. Folks, we've got to wake up in this country. And of course, part of this is the elections and the policies that are adopted both at the national level and in states across the country. And that in part is why we are crisscrossing this country this week, going to several key battleground states that will be instrumental in the midterm elections. And joining us, joining the FRC team as we talk to supporters in these key states about our Bold Advance initiative, which is our work through churches of registering, informing, and mobilizing Christian voters, is former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. She's on the road with us this week, and she joins me now on radio. Michelle, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much, Tony. Great to be with you.
A true road warrior.
A true road warrior, and happy to be so. I think that in light of all of this tragic, shocking news that you're talking about with your listeners today, I think the positive is that we are out there meeting with believers all across the country who aren't just shaking their heads and wringing their hands. They want to do something about putting our biblical standard into effect in our world for the sake of our kids and for our families and for the future. And so, Tony, it is so exciting to me to meet with believers across the country who agree that these elections matter. We saw that in 2016. Christians are the ones who made the difference at the polls, and they will make the difference at the polls in 2018.
And we saw that last night, a great group of folks in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Oh, salt of the earth, fantastic people. And they really cared about the issues that we talked about. That's why they were there. They were highly motivated by biblical values and biblical standards, and they put their faith to action, and they were willing to put money toward this effort as well. We saw that over the weekend, where again, this new blockbuster movie that came out, Black Panther.
Yes.
The left is targeting the potential voters that are attending that movie, and they have people dressed up in characters from the movie, and they're doing on-site voter registration. The best response to that would be for churches to do voter registration.
Absolutely.
In their churches, and then inform people, as you did last night, Tony, and as General Jerry Boykin did last night. You showed the platform of the Democrat Party versus the Republican Party, and the fact that the Democrats tend to follow their platform about three-fourths of the time when they vote. Republicans tend to follow their platform about 90% of the time when they vote. So when you're voting for a person of a political party, you are going to get an outcome that will be reflective
Absolutely.
Of your values or not. And people are figuring that out.
And that's shocking. Most people don't realize that, but these party platforms do matter. That's a study
Hugely
looking
important.
Back at the platforms over the last, I think, three or four decades that showed that they do matter. And you mentioned, you know, this blockbuster movie that set records this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
There is a group. It's called Electoral Justice mm-hmm. Project. Mm-hmm. It's an offshoot of the Movement for Black Lives. They are registering people at these movies with the goal of trying to obviously affect the outcome of
right.
the midterm election.
And that's being funded and paid for by George Soros and George Soros-type organizations. They are not taking these elections sitting down. One thing I think it's important that your listeners understand, the left is already engaged in ensuring their victories in 2018, and that's why we're out here.
Right.
Because we're not sitting on our hands, we're not whining, we're going to do the same thing, because it isn't just George Soros or Black Lives Matter, it is also the radical GLBT through the Human Rights Committee. They're spending $26 million in the 2018 election. If you look at Planned Parenthood, remember, they take in $500 million of your tax money, and with all that money, Shazam, they end up having $38 million that they can spend on the 2018 elections, and the ACLU has announced they're going to be spending $25 million. You also have individual billionaires like the activist Tim Gill, who spent $400 million of his own fortune to advance the LGBT cause. Well, again, remember, Hillary Clinton spent twice as much money as Donald Trump did on the last election, and she lost. And we don't need to have as much money, but we do need to have money. So we're trying to raise the money.
As you know, you were out there campaigning in the last election, not necessarily for a candidate, but for a cause and to get evangelicals, engaged Christians registered in voting. And you were on the bus in North Carolina that we had going around. But we know that evangelicals turned out in record numbers, and they voted in almost complete unison for Donald Trump in the presidential election. This effort, as we're going across the country, in part is working through our culture impact teams in churches, pastors. If your church does not have a culture impact team, look, Michelle, you know this, you've seen this, you've seen the policies that have come from this administration in the first year. Elections have consequences.
Unbelievable consequences. And the media is not telling you the whole story or the true story of what's going on.
Oh, I'm surprised President, by that.
President Trump has affected, actually not just talked about it, but he's put forward the most pro-life policies of any president in recent time, including Ronald Reagan, and the most pro-religious liberty policies of any president in recent time. We can go through, I think one thing that is entirely significant is his designation of Jerusalem as Israel's capital and moving our embassy there. He's changed foreign policy because of that, but also biblically, he's put the United States in a pathway of blessing because of making that decision. He is a bold man. He wants to know what the issues are. And this isn't a yay, rah-rah for Donald Trump. This is a yay, rah-rah for a biblical standard. And God has used him to advance a biblical standard on a number of issues.
Yeah, I was just talking with David Brody. There's a separate about his new book that has come out about the faith of Donald Trump. There's a distinction between, you know, Donald Trump and where he stands personally and spiritually.
Absolutely.
And then there's the issue that I think David focuses on most in his book is how he's built a relationship with evangelicals. It's reflective in his policies. But I want to ask you, what's at stake in this midterm election? I mean, we see a lot of activity on the left. What's at stake?
Well, this, I think we feel, is a reprieve that we have been given right now from the onslaught of the cultural left that they're trying to impose on the family. And in this reprieve, as I had just stated, we are seeing an advance of pro-family, pro-life, pro-religious liberty issues. That is all at risk because, as you stated last night in one of our meetings up in Lancaster, the left has made a decision. They are going to impeach Donald Trump, and they want to impeach him, and will in fact impeach him if Nancy Pelosi controls the House of Representatives with a swing of just 20-some seats in the House. She could do that. If they impeach him, they know that his agenda is completely over, and they will cripple him and very likely deny him a second term. And all of these gains could go away because a number of his gains have happened through executive orders, although the tax bill was legislative, so that sticks for a little bit longer. This is all about to go away. And then the other thing we need to remember is the Senate. The Senate is very narrowly controlled by Republicans. If the Senate is controlled by Democrats, I don't care if Donald Trump is nominating Scalia clones to the court, they will never get approved by a Democrat Senate, and we won't get decent justices in. So much hangs in the balance in the judicial system, legislatively, and all through the executive branches. So this is extremely key that we've only had about a year of the Trump administration, and the left is committed to shutting it down.
Right.
And I think that we can continue to see this go on potentially for 8 years. I think that could happen, but we have to we can't just be so happy that he won in 2016 that we go to sleep.
Right.
And the difference makers are those who are spiritually active and governmentally engaged. And that's why you win elections now. before the actual election year. Now is when you win them. You raise the money, you have pastors preaching biblically from their pulpit, and then you motivate an extra 10% of the people in your congregation. You cannot believe the number of believers who don't vote or get registered to vote. So if each congregation makes it their goal to get an additional 10% of the congregants to vote at the polls and then vote biblically, have their pastor inform them on the issues, I'm telling you, it will completely revolutionize the country, but in our own personal lives, will be revolutionized, mm-hmm. in our families, in our businesses, in our community. So on so many different levels, we will totally make America great again from a spiritual perspective.
But I think
isn't that what we want?
Yeah, the key, obviously, to America being great again is that it become good again, and
Amen.
That is the spiritual component. You mentioned the courts, and before we run out of time, I just want to mention the rumors, new rumors swirling around Washington again, that Kennedy is going to retire from the court.
Well,
creating,
they talked about that a couple months ago.
It's come back, and I've heard that from the kind of some inside sources, and now it's public back out there again that he may retire before the next session of the court. That then puts this front and center in the midterm elections. And I want to go back to just very quickly on the issue of impeachment. There have been about 7 or 8 senators that have called upon the president to resign over the allegation of sexual misconduct, you know, going back 10 years or so. In fact, the last one was New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, who called on him to resign. I think that when you look at these articles of impeachment, they may have no basis in him violating the law, but that will not keep Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats from filing it and completely derailing the conservative agenda.
Because I think one thing people need to understand is impeachment really is more about politics than it is about legalities. And it is the perception that the public holds of the president. And if they can create enough doubt in the public's mind, then people might be willing to go along with impeachment. And so that's why this is very real. For us, it seems crazy lunacy because there is no basis for impeachment. That doesn't matter, apparently, anymore. It's
you're
perception.
Describing Washington. I mean, it has become so partisan and so divided.
It isn't even partisan. It's unhinged.
Yeah.
It's just absolute delusion unhinged. And it's like a demonic rage that's in a swirl. And people are – the left – was so certain that they were going to continue the Obama way, that we would never again be able to bring our perspective to bear in Washington. So the fact that a biblical perspective is in Washington again, and the fact that you are able to have the tremendous access you have, they want to stop that.
Well, and we hope to continue engaging Christians in the government of our country. Well, folks, we're out of time. Michelle, thanks so much for joining us. And we're looking forward to crisscrossing the country this week. Folks, we'll keep you posted. If you want to keep up with us, check out Twitter at T. Perkins. All right, until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. Again, that's 1-866-372-7234. 372-7234.